We've been friends a long time. We can discuss anything, right?
Sure, bud.
Well, I have an issue.
No kidding. You cheer for Boston.
An issue down there?
Hey, half of all guys experience erectile dysfunction. Heard of Felix? Felix connects you to a doctor for an assessment. No appointment, no pharmacy visit, no awkward conversations. Treatment is delivered discreetly to your door.
Sounds great.
I just wish you'd be more discreet about wearing that Boston jersey in Toronto.
Go to felix.ca/drive to start your online visit.
We're back. And I thank my guy, Hazy D, Anthony Davis. Back-to-back shows. Overdrive is up and running. And love to start with this question. And Rick, if you have a mic and you have access to one, maybe Rick in programming can explain why there isn't hashtag Overdrive available now on at least one of the TSN channels.
Well, yeah, hold
Ricky,
on.
What do you got?
Rick
Rick's got no idea. Okay,
he's not a programmer.
Leave Rick out of it. He has no idea why TV does what they do. Okay. He's trying to turn over the World
I was
Cup
just
show.
Gonna give him a chance as the one of the programming directors to answer the question.
Well, but if you're miscasting him is the point. No, we'll get Rick on. I don't know why you sent him a text earlier, like, we gotta get you on. Why do we have to get Rick on? Like, explain
it was
to me.
Obviously we love a Rick. Joke.
I know, but he didn't take it as a joke. He said,
oh, why was
multiple
he what
notes.
Did he call you panicking saying, do
no.
I have to prep for this?
He sent multiple notes saying, hey, whenever you need me, I'm kinda I think he's raring to go. We'll get him on at some point.
Okay.
But you can't give these guys some sort of an oxygen, like, hey, they're gonna get on the air, and then we don't put them on. We'll get Nick to come on at some point.
And the other thing is, say, we're going to put you on air and ask you a question that you have no idea what the answer is to, because
it's not
in programming.
It's not his job to figure out the TV scheduling, the radio scheduling.
Hey, maybe Rick will do the best bets later on. We'll get him some. He gave you some keepers yesterday. Well, maybe we'll pick his brain on that later
yeah,
on.
Yeah, we'll pick his brain a little bit later on.
All I know is that you're sounding better. Did you get a good sleep? I mean, we're...
I'm trying to get there where I stop thinking about it and talking about it. Honestly, I have been in a bad place for
really?
A while. Like, whatever I've got, and it doesn't matter, and I'm at home, but it's just dropping me, man. It's really tough to find the energy, and yet, here we go. We got 3 hours ahead of us to... You know, talk, and we're looking forward to the show. I don't want to be a downer. I don't want people.
No,
like, no one wants to tune in and be like, no, this guy's, you know, he's not feeling well. Like, no one cares, you know. So,
well,
it's all good.
And I'm fired up. I mean, I think there's lots, obviously there's lots to talk about. But, I mean, you know, think about, I've got a feeling tonight, I don't know how you guys feel, but, like, the Leafs are catching San Jose in a back-to-back situation. They're feeling good about winning last night. Like, I watched that Seattle-LA game. That was the 80s. I had to, I'm not lying. I finished watching the Calgary-Florida game, and then I turned that on, and I'm like, is that the right? It was 4-4, like a minute into the second.
Yeah, it ended up 10-8 last night.
9-8 in overtime.
Or
9-8.
That's what it was. 9-8 in overtime.
It was crazy. Crazy.
And after yesterday, we talked about Seattle being big and structured, and that's how they end up playing.
Yeah, I mean, and their goaltending was really good. Like, I threw in there, they've had really stable goaltending. Marty Jones gave up 8 and got the win. Like, and L.A. put their goalie on waivers today.
That's
crazy. I
don't
know if you saw that.
Yeah, Cal Peterson is on waivers. He's in year one of a 3-year deal.
$5 million a year.
5 sheets a year, too. Like, it just, it's, remember I said this to you, Hayes? This is why I wanted to bring it up in, what, minute 5 of the show. This season, is something's weird about this season. Like, we are going to have storyline after storyline because there's just crazy things happening almost nightly. I don't know why it is.
Yeah, it kind of feels that way. I mean, last night, that was certainly the case. You had, that game felt old school. You have Ovechkin doing something that I think deserves a lot of attention. I mean,
absolutely.
Everyone keeps focusing on the bigger picture of chasing Gretzky in the goals department, but the fact that he's passed him with goals on the road is astonishing, man. Like, are you passing any stat that is owned by Wayne Gretzky?
No kidding, dude. Any stat of Gretzky, Hayes, it's like, we marvel at Crosby and McDavid, and if you go like five ahead of them, maybe 10 in some scenarios, there's Gretzky with like a zillion point lead on the rest of the universe. His stats are crazy, and to come even close and ultimately pass one of them, it's incredible.
Yeah, it is. And he had a couple last night. And, I mean, I don't know when he's going to slow down, but it's doesn't seem like it's going to happen anytime soon. Like, he's on pace again for, what, 45?
Yeah, like just under 50. Like, let's just say he slows down and gets 40 this year. Like, now he's just chasing Gretzky because I think he's close. What is he, around 10 or 9, 8 behind Gordie Howe? I think, like, he's right there. Like, Howe is 802. So I would argue that he continues on. Like, he's going to pass Howe.
Oh, he'll pass him by the
January.
Yeah,
exactly.
The way he's rolling, I mean, that the guy, he plays every single night. Like, that's another thing. Like, he just – it's amazing, him and Sid, how they have effectively the same, like, points total. Yet Sid's played like 150 less games or something like that because of all the injuries he had. And I think that, again, like, you can't hold it against Sid, but what you should do is pump the tires of the guy who stays healthy. Like, Ovechkin is available every single night. Like, he scores 40-plus, 50-plus every year, and he's available every single night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Physical, too. Hits everything that moves.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was crazy. And was Eddie Olczyk calling that game last night for Seattle?
I thought I heard him last night. I believe there's a three-man. They've got a three-man booth there, right, with JT Brown. But I thought I heard it because the broadcast that I was on, I wasn't sure if it was the LA broadcast as well. But it was, I would be 99%.
Well, we'll find out
anyway.
We'll find out before Eddie comes on. Eddie's coming on just after 5.
Yeah.
He's calling a game for TNT tonight. But we'll ask him about that if he was in the building calling it and the what's going on with Seattle. And we love having Eddie O on anyway, but Eddie's record could be caught tonight. He's sitting at 18 games in a row with a point back in the 80s. Daryl Sittler also in the same spot. And Mitch Marner's going for 18 straight tonight. So we'll catch up with Eddie in about an hour. And, scenarios like this, there's no reason to believe it will or won't happen. I mean, he's so hot right now, you'd think, of course, he's going to put up a point. But maybe Aaron Dell stands on his head. Maybe the Sharks show up. Maybe he's snake bit. Maybe he has an off night.
And, Hayes, you tweeted it out the other day. Like, he's not wasting any time keeping the thing going. It seems like the first 5 minutes of games, he gets it taken care of.
I was asked about it today, guys. I don't know how you feel, but, like, throughout this streak, these aren't moldy points. You know how sometimes, I'm sure you picked up second assists where it's like you throw it to, throw it around the boards and you change and the guy scores down the other end. Like, a lot of his points have been like first-hand plays, like either a beautiful pass or a goal. Like, it's, a nice goal. Like, it hasn't been, he kept the streak alive, but that was close. It hit his skate as he was cruising through the neutral zone. Like, that's the thing that's kind of stood out for me is, when you see streaks, sometimes they keep going, they get willed, a little bit of luck here, a little bit of, I haven't seen a lot of luck in that one.
It hasn't been like a second assist on an empty netter or something.
Right, I mean, that's what I mean,
He is scoring early and often, and that speaks to the leadership as well that comes with this streak, is that he's setting a tone for his team early in games. And the game in Detroit, it was a goal later in the game. I think it was the third or fourth goal that effectively put it away. But, he has been outstanding. And Ilya Samsonov is returning. It's kind of strange. Like, Keefe is really – he's one of those coaches that really doesn't want to tip his hand on goaltending at all. Like, he is a true believer in not letting anyone know anything.
I've never understood it either.
But he is committed to it. He believes in it. Because yesterday, Samsonov came out after a skate and said, I feel great, no pain, I'm good to go. And then Keefe kind of was like, nah, I don't know. We'll see. And now Samsonov's starting. So ultimately, it doesn't really matter. I just don't know why, Keefe, who's he, like, who in, is Todd McClellan? Like, oh, I'm screwed.
How about
now?
This one, Hayes? Who cares? Nobody cares. No one's going to say,
right,
oh, we're going to change up. Like, when we used to play the New Jersey Devils, maybe the day before practice, if Brodeur was playing or we had the sense that, we might do some dump-in drills where you would keep the puck away from the goaltender because he played it so well. Other than that, I can't think of anything altering of who's in the net.
Well, the only thing here's what I would say to that. If I was going to pre-scout, for example, Kakinen to Arendelle, Arendelle is not a big goalie. So what I would do, you know, is sit down with my shooters today and go, this guy doesn't cover a lot of net up top because he physically can't. Like, you're facing UC Saros, guys like that who are 5'10", 5'11". They look a lot different than Darcy Kemper, Matt Murray. Guys are 6'4", 6'5". Like, so it might be, I would just get into my shooter's ear and say, if you got a blind shot, you know, shoot for the ears here, shoot for top corners because this guy physically isn't as big. That would be my only pre-scout, and it would be because of physically the size of the goaltenders. Not their ability, but more like, hey, Arendelle's not a big guy compared to, I get, you know, Kakinen played very well last night. James Reimer still day-to-day not available. So, you know, we're going to see Arendelle, who last time I remember Arendelle, he effectively ended Drake Batherson's season last year. He got suspended for that play.
That's right. Yeah, I forgot about
behind
that.
Behind the net in Buffalo. Yeah. He was with Buffalo.
He gave a little, like, how's she doing? Like, it was a greasy play. Like, no doubt about it. Like, and that Batherson had been chosen to the All-Star game, and then that derailed his season. I think, I want to say he was out, like, north of 2 months.
Yeah. Well, listen, Dell is... We'll see what he's got. I mean, San Jose playing last night. The Leafs are massive favorites. I think on FanDuel they're like minus 300 or something like that.
Makes sense.
So Eddie Olchuk will join us just after 5. We'll get our boy Jerry McElroy, Rick, Nick McVicker in to, I think, explain the craziness of what we're listening to on the radio and watching on TSN.
Yeah.
Because in that group, Argentina's through and Poland's through. But there was like a good portion of the end of that game where it was going to, the tiebreak was going to come down to fair play. In other words,
what?
Mexico had more yellow cards than Poland, so Poland was going to get through.
Dude, that's how could that ever be a deciding factor in anything? That's a joke.
It's crazy.
You're being serious?
I'm being dead serious. That's because it's about points, and then it's about goal differential, then it's about head-to-head. Like, at some point, you got to pick who's going through.
You know that I'm not a stats person, but I believe you could go to some analytical case study and see who's had more shots towards the goal.
How about you? Expected goals to get through the group stage?
Did I say that? I did not say expected goals. Hey, you know what?
Go for it.
The hell with it. That's, expected goals.
Yep.
That's
I
what
agree.
It would be, but they are going through an analytics. How many yellow cards have been
that's
handed
absurd.
Out?
That's absurd. I thought you were joking.
No, they did a great job describing it, you know, on the post game and during the afternoon. That's the wild portion of the end of the group stage.
I'd rather have my team be edgy. Like, you see guys flapping around the pitch, you call it, like, and a guy like will be delayed reaction. The wind will blow on his ear, and he throws himself on the ground and flaps.
I'm not going to go all like Rock'em Sock'em and say that they're gutless or whatever.
No,
some of the antics on there are a little off-putting. But like when you barely touch a guy and he's flailing on the ground, it's like come
it's strategy.
On.
But
I mean,
that's what I've been told, and that's why I don't go there. It's like, hey, that's
absolutely
a strategy. If they can draw
strategy
a penalty,
for
get
what?
A guy kicked out.
Well, if you get a penalty out of it, if you get a free kick, if somehow you draw a yellow card, I don't know. I mean, it's all about possession. It's about
right.
if you get tackled and you lose the ball, you drop, maybe you don't lose the ball. You know, I mean,
some of them are outrageous.
Of course it is. They're hilarious.
I enjoy them because I'm like, at least he's trying. Like, he, you know, a guy will flap. I see one, and it's a meme. I don't know where it's from, where a guy walks by and flicks the guy's ear, and the guy throws himself onto the ground.
Dude,
like
I saw one
shot.
Noodles last week. I don't think it was in the World Cup. The ref just kind of tapped a guy in the back.
I saw that one.
It was a yard sale because he thought he acted like the ref punched him in the middle of the back. I'm like, that was insane.
Well, the ref helped him up, and then the guy patted him on the back as the guy started running, and the guy dropped again.
Yeah.
That was, I mean, those are extremes, but again, it's been explained to me. That is That is part of the gamesmanship. That is part of trying to draw the penalty. Mm-hmm. It's just sometimes I
and some of it is legit. Like you get clipped in the ankle or whatever and you drop. Like that,
yeah.
You're going at a really fast pace.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it hurts. And these guys are like, screw it. I'm going to sit down and,
absolutely,
you know, see if we get a call. And, yeah, that's what ended up happening. It turns out Saudi Arabia ended up scoring, and it didn't matter because Poland was getting through anyway on goal differential. But, yeah, Poland through, Argentina through. Argentina, remember, they lost that opening match against the Saudis, and it was like, Rome is burning, now you're toast. They go out there and win their next two matches, and they're through, and they end up winning the group, and it's like, doesn't even matter.
Right.
You know? So, anyway, we got Steve Phillips coming up a little bit later. Donnie Baseball, Don Mattingly.
I thought he was disappearing.
Well, he's taken on a role with the Blue Jays as a bench coach for John Schneider. And we'll get into it extensively with Steve, but I'm curious if this is Schneider driving this or is this management driving this? You know, in other words.
Doesn't it smell like, I don't know what this smells like, but when you're looking at it, you're like, if this kind of inexperienced guy Schneider can't get the job done, you got a guy sitting there. But you wonder what Schneider thinks about that.
Yeah, it's definitely a safety valve.
Everybody works, Hayes. You don't want somebody sitting there looking over your shoulder. He was looking over Charlie's shoulder, you know what I mean? Everybody wants to...
Yeah.
You never know what goes on behind the scenes with that type of stuff.
Well, you see nowadays, guys, in hockey, you look on benches now, the head coach is the head coach. The associate coach is a guy who's been the head coach in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, and then pretty there's much, three other coaches. There's
exactly.
Like four or five coaches on the bench now. It is insane.
Yeah, there is a lot of. But point being is, like, if a guy struggles, there's a guy right there next to you that could jump right
Which
in.
Which doesn't seem like a winning mentality. You know, like, why give the guy a deal if you're like, he could really screw this up? We better have someone behind him. You know, like, I think it's more like Schneider's going to say all the right things, that he's excited. Mattingly's got a wealth of knowledge. You know, like, he played in the league forever. He's a great player. He's been a manager for a long time. And Schneider's still raw. You know, like, he's a young manager. But
I know. But regardless of his inexperience, I would always say to him, if you're going to manage in the big leagues, you pick your own bench coach. Like, that should be the something that the manager of a Major League Baseball team should have the right to do.
Well, and like, I think Schneider will say that. Like, Schneider, Schneider, I think, is going to join us next week, hopefully. And we'll get into this all with John.
Well, ask Phillips if he thinks this was Schneider's pick, but I highly doubt it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, from a PR standpoint, they're going to say, you got to protect Schneider, you know. Like, you gotta publicize it as he's all in, which I think he probably would be. You know, like, if you got confidence in your abilities and you think a guy can come in and help, then go for it, right? Like, go for it. And maybe this is a testament to what the Jays are building, that Mattingly's willing to take a gig like this. But, it's interesting. I mean, that's kind of been a history of that in Toronto with guys over their shoulders. I mean, Dwayne Casey and Nick Nurse, and you had John Schneider and Montoya. You had Keefe with the Marlies forever when Babcock was here. Like, a lot of internal growth.
Yeah. If you actually – I meant to bring this up. Like, the amount of people that the Leafs have on staff, there were times where I'd walk in there. Paul McLean, is he still employed by the Leafs? Like, remember the former Ottawa coach? Like, I'd walk in there. He'd be sitting at a desk. Like, also, Jacques Lemaire was there when Babcock was there.
Yeah, Lou brought him in.
Like, there was just a wealth of experience behind the scenes. And I swear, like, I did a Leaf game maybe a couple of years ago. Paul McLean was
Yeah, no, I remember that. Now, that's consultant stuff. Like, Mattingly's in the trenches, right? Like, Mattingly's not living in Florida. Like, he's up here. He's in the dugout. He's legitimately a part of the staff, which is very different than anything the Leafs have done because they have so much money to throw around. Yeah. But it's intriguing that Mattingly's coming in. And, again, I think it says something that Mattingly probably could have had multiple choices. You know, I'm sure he had different opportunities, and he wanted to come up here probably because he realizes this is a playoff team and a good team.
Right.
So we'll catch up with Steve Phillips, and we'll get his take on this and more. All right, Eddie Olchuk coming up. Jerry's Percentages in just over an hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Jerry's Percentages in just over an hour. You guys see this report, Mike Cleese in Denver. He's a Broncos reporter. He's reporting that Russell Wilson's wife, Ciara, threw him a birthday party yesterday, and about half the team attended. Is that normal, or is that a story that the other half was not there?
There's 58 guys on the team, isn't there?
Like, yeah, well, 53 in that practice squad and coaches. Yeah. And
that's a lot. Like, I don't know. It's hard to say. If it's a basketball team and only, like, two guys show up,
right.
Like, it's a little different. Hockey team, there's 23, usually 25, 26 guys showing up. Like, I don't know.
Dude, you never know. Maybe guys hate his guts. Maybe his vibe around the locker room where it's like, when you get a guy like that that's coming in, there's so much excitement that he's going to turn it around, and he's performing like that, and it doesn't seem like a whole lot bothers him. It's kind of annoying.
Well,
like, it's really annoying.
You get the party, which I'm sure was extravagant, and you know they're coming off.
And there's something in the back of the other guys' brains that are like, is this really that important? Is this necessary for this birthday?
Right.
He's not turning 50.
No.
He's not turning 40, and he's not turning 30. So how important is this?
It's not that important, I guess, is
right.
The answer. But maybe he's a big birthday guy. I don't know. But
I know. The other guys in the team, they probably go to the corner pub and have wings and beers with their buddies, and this guy's having an extravagant,
right.
Catered, massive party.
But it may not be him. His wife put it on. Like, he's not going, hey, put this on, and like,
I know, Noodles, but you know the deal. You could relay the message. Yeah, you could say, things are bad right now. It's not exactly party time. Don't even think about some silly party.
Yeah, because I think what you get in the NFL, too, is, like, it's so much more angry when you lose. And it's a moody league, more so than anywhere else.
Yeah, it's only 16 games.
Because you only play so many games, and the turnover is so quick. The discrepancy between guaranteed money and non-guaranteed money is so legit.
Yeah.
And they're 3-8. They lost again. They're done. They suck. But there's Russ with his $250 million deal. His Ciara's got $100 million. It was probably, like, I'm really reading into this because we don't know who was there, who wasn't there. I think it would be significant if there were, like, offensive linemen that didn't show up. Right. Or a running back that didn't show up, a fullback, you know, if a backup safety didn't show up, whatever. But I could see that being an issue for guys. They're like, really, dude? Like, I'm dying. I may not be in the league next year.
Yeah. And by the way, it's November and I barely kind of know you. It's not like I'm super buddies with you.
Right.
And I hate the token show up where it's like, I just got to show up because what? We're teammates? I hardly know you. I don't ever talk.
Well, but
you're
people
the quarterback,
will.
So I have to show up.
If I was on that team, I would have showed up for 2 hours, had a few drinks, free drinks, and rolled on, you know, kept going. But you show your face and you move on.
If I don't hang out with somebody, if I don't have I'm at an age now, I just don't care. It's like I'm not showing up at a wedding, a birthday party, if I don't have any kind of personal relationship with you.
But that's different now. We're old and crusty.
Our producer, the Grappler, is getting married. If I'm invited, I see the Grappler every day. I work with him. I'll go.
Yeah, of course.
But if it's somebody like, I ain't doing it, man. I'm not
yeah,
doing
well,
it.
Yeah, well, I mean, are you getting the invite? I hear what you're saying. If you're getting a random invite, it can be a little bit strange.
Yeah.
But
it's not random, Hayes. It's just if we don't have any kind of, like, if it's just a cousin from years ago where I don't ever see you in 30 years, I'm not showing up.
Yeah.
I don't want to put it on the down mood before we get to our next guest.
Okay. All right. We got our boy Steve Phillips on the line. Here he is, our TSN MLB and Blue Jay analyst. How you doing, Steve?
Guys, I'm doing great. Listen, I can relate. I want to be invited to the party, but I don't want to go to the party. Just invite me.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, yeah. Steve, do you go to, like, I'm getting to a point where it's like, you don't ever call me, or I don't ever talk to you. Why am I even going? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I mean, look, if it's a really close friend, family member, I'm considering it. But I'm with you. If it's just a general party, yeah, I've got other things to do. Okay. You know, even in the off season, when I'm watching baseball, I can find something else to do.
Yeah. Well, obviously some big news today. Don Mattingly was invited to join John Schneider's staff. And I'm curious how you read this, Steve. Like, would this be 100% driven by Schneider, or would management be kind of driving it as well, saying, hey, you're the interim tag's gone, you're our guy, but you're still young, and we got Donnie Baseball willing to come up. This is something we'd like to make happen. How did you see this relationship working out in terms of Mattingly joining Schneider's staff?
Yeah, so it's hard to know whether it initiated with Schneider or initiated with the organization. That being said, whichever side brought it up, I think the other person would have said, oh, that's a great idea. Because Schneider grew up in New Jersey, Yankee fan, loves Mattingly. And so the idea of having the guy who's got the 20th most games managed in Major League Baseball history as a bench coach is a coup. And by the way, Don Mattingly fits the type of people that the Jays want in their organization. He is as good a man. I mean, he is such a good guy, having gotten to know him over the years. He is just such a down-to-earth, humble guy. And so to have somebody with that level of experience joining the bench to help the young manager in his first full season managing, I mean, you can't find a better guy. I mean, unless Jim Leland wanted to step in and be a bench coach, I don't know that you're going to find somebody else that with this most recent level of experience, who's been part of developing young players. He also was on a win-now team in Los Angeles where, hey, listen, he went to 3 division titles before he left Los Angeles. And so I think it's a great match made between Schneider and Mattingly and the organization. And so I'm surprised, honestly. You know, I had interviewed Mattingly just a couple weeks ago, and that fire still burns for him to manage someday, but I don't think there's any part of Schneider looking over his shoulder. I don't think there's any part of him worried that this is, you know, they're bringing in his replacement to back him up. I think this is really just a great idea for a veteran manager to do something different. And I think for Mattingly, listen, he's on the contemporary era ballot for the Hall of Fame. And, you know, in these committees that look at the former players to give them a second look, it's more than just their playing career. It's their commitment and contribution to all of baseball. And so I think for Don Mattingly, too, keeps him in the forefront, the love of the game, the connection to the game. And so I think there's some value to Mattingly in this as well.
I don't want to make too much of it, Steve, but if Mattingly was given the manager position of the Blue Jays, wouldn't he handpick his bench coach? Like, I almost feel like if you're going to let Schneider be the, you know, run the big league team, like, let him handpick his own guy. And maybe he did in this scenario. I'm not sure.
I mean, yeah, generally, you'd want the bench coach and manager to be connected. And therefore, that's why I believe that whoever came up with the idea first, the other side thought, wow, great idea. You know, whether it's Schneider thing, and I wonder if I could get him to do this, and the organization saying, I don't know, we can check, or the organization saying, we think Mattingly would be a great guy, I think Schneider would be like, oh, yeah, because there is no ego there for Mattingly. And so I think that you're right. It is, you know, we don't know exactly the way that it unfolded, but I think that no matter which way it went, I think either side, both sides would have been right on board with it. So I'm with you. You don't ever want to assign somebody a bench coach, but I don't think that's what happened here.
So what do you think Mattingly ultimately brings? Like, if, you know, we know his reputation as a player. If you're Vladdy Guerrero Jr., who's a first baseman, if you're Bo Bichette, if you're Kevin Biggio, George Springer, you know, like what kind of value does Mattingly bring to the table from a tangible standpoint once he gets here?
Yeah, instant credibility for sure, right? So, I mean, he doesn't have to come in, and so his words will have impact and meaning. He was an outstanding offensive player. He played in the American League East or the Eastern Division of the American League and back then. So he certainly knows the game. He knows the division. He knows the current players. He's a development guy with the Marlins. He's a veteran player manager when he was with the Dodgers. You know, he's got a broad resume. You know, he's a potential Hall of Fame player that we'll find out on Sunday when that committee votes in what is an extraordinary ballot of players that they're considering. But I think he brings a level of experience for decision-making, both with personalities and interacting in the clubhouse with players, with managing a pitching staff and having to go through that. Remember, a really good pitching staff that he had down in Miami. And I think for him now, a chance to maybe see what some good offenses look like, too. So I think it's one for his resume. It's something that he hadn't done before in this capacity, and so he gets to be able to do that and gets a feel now, you know, back for the American League, which he hasn't been in a while. And so if there's a thought at some point of managing again with an American League team, he's an option there. And I think from the club perspective, he's bringing instant credibility and instant experience to draw upon with a young manager.
Steve, you mentioned the 16-member Hall of Fame committee, and Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens' name is being bandied about. What do you think happens there?
Yeah, this is like this group of players that are being considered. So you've got some of the nicest guys in the world. Fred McGriff is on that ballot. Dale Murphy's on the ballot, and Mattingly. On the other side, you've got Albert Bell. You've got Bonds and Clemens on there. I think Rafael Palmeiro's on the ballot. And here's the thing, like, there's almost everybody on there would get my vote for the Hall of Fame. They would. I just think that they're, for one reason or another, they've been passed over. And I would, you know, my view is that the Hall of Fame is a museum that documents the history of the game. And what I would do is put everybody in and then tell their story, because in every era of baseball, there's been performance enhancement. So I don't know what to think. I think with these committees, one of the things we found when Harold Baines got voted in, it was because the composition of the committee with Tony La Russa, who had managed him and, you know, sold the appreciation he had for his hitting with runners in scoring position and hitting in a clutch and driving, like, it swayed other voters. And I think that there's got to be the right, you know, I think, constitution of that committee for those guys to get in. So you're going to need younger voters who tend to look at the steroid era a little bit differently than some of the older voters. And again, I don't know who's on this voting committee yet this year, but I think it's really going to be an important factor in it as to who gets in. I think we're going to get Fred McGriff in. I do. I think there's going to be an appreciation for that. And it could be that if McGriff gets in, then Bonds and Clemens don't, because there is some thought that, you know, they did it with steroids. McGriff did it clean and seems to be the one who's, you know, not given the sort of his due when you start to factor in that he did it clean. And 500 home runs or 493 home runs mattered, you know, almost as much as 500. So I think it's, you know, Schilling's on this ballot too. I mean, it is crazy ballot. And so I think McGriff gets in. I think Mattingly actually has a real shot. And I think Dale Murphy gets a shot. My guess is the sort of good guys on the ballot, you know, those without sort of the baggage, I think have a pretty good chance of getting voted in.
With Steve Phillips. So the winter meeting's right around the corner, Steve. And if you're on Twitter, all you see is Judge trending, DeGrom, Verlander. Like, those are the three names of substance. How do you see the order going down here in terms of which one will sign first? And is there any type of domino effect with Verlander and DeGrom?
So, yeah, so I think that Judge probably goes first. You know, we're hearing now the Yankees have an offer out about 8 years, $300 million. You know, and I'm not sure that's where it ends up. But, you know, he doesn't have to wait for anybody, right? He's the one setting the market. He's at the top of the position player market. He'd be at the top of every player market. And so when he gets something that he hears, he's able to sort of make his deal. I think that the question is, which shortstop's going to come off the board first? Which starting pitcher? I think Verlander ends up going first on the pitcher side. I think the Dodgers end up signing him. And the question is, do they go to the third year guarantee? Does he have to earn it by staying healthy? How do they map that out? And I think at some point, you know, DeGrom goes back to the Mets, and Rodon probably ends up in Texas would be the way I would see this shaking itself out right now. But I think that Judge probably goes first. I think Verlander among the pitchers. And then the shortstops, I wouldn't be surprised if Dansby Swanson ends up being the first one off the board. He's probably the fourth highest contract of the group, but I think that he becomes more appealing because it is a shorter-term deal. Where Turner and Correa both are looking for 9-10-year deals, I think Swanson, if he ends up getting a 6-year deal, probably ends up taking it. And Bogaerts may be the second guy, because I think teams have pivoted from the long-term deals to the two shorter-term deals in Bogaerts and Swanson, and may make a move there before the big guys take their money. And I think what players have to be careful, there's only so much demand. And, you know, so the Dodgers, if they decide to go Gavin Lux, if the Padres decide, you know what, we've got Ha-Sung Kim and we've got Fernando Tatis, we don't need another shortstop. If the Braves say, oh, we're going to go with Vaughn Grissom, and the Yankees say, we're just going to stick with the young kids in the middle infield, well, then there's not as many seats as the shortstops thought there were. And if any of the, you know, if Turner or Correa signed first, the other guy may not find the team willing to give him 10 years or 9 years, and he may have to settle for something less. So I think timing is going to be very interesting to watch here.
Steve, in the last 2 minutes, you didn't say the word Blue Jays once. What are they involved with? What are they looking into?
Yeah, so they're going to be in on us back into the rotation starting pitching. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they get in a Taiwan Walker. You know, the guy for me that I really like is Chris Bassett, and he's sort of an afterthought on all the other guys. Now, I think they're in on Kode Senga, the pitcher from Japan. He's got a 100-mile-per-hour fastball and an outstanding split. He's a lot like Kevin Gausman in his arsenal of pitches. And they're going to be in on an outfielder and the left-hand hitter. And so, but I think that what's going to be interesting is they can really play in the trade market, too. And it doesn't seem like they're in on any of the shortstops. I could see them in on Bellinger, Brandon Nimmo, Andrew Benintendi. All of those guys, I think, fit what they're trying to do. Michael Conforto possibly as well. But I think that they've got depth at catcher. If they, you know, they could deal a Biggio or even an Espinal if they wanted to, with Merrifield part of the mix there too. And I think still make some deals to add in some impact when it comes to either the pitching side or the outfield.
All right, Steve, we'll leave it there. It's going to be a wild couple of weeks moving forward with the Hall of Fame stuff and the winter meetings and free agency. There's already been signings. Things are already starting to move. And obviously with the Mattingly news today, it's pretty cool time here in Toronto as well. So we'll let you get back at it. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you, buddy.
Terrific, guy. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Good talk to you.
There's Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB analyst.
One thing I find weird, Hayes, when he says those type of players might fit what the Jays want to do. Aren't the Jays like trying to win? Because that's what the Dodgers are trying to do. That's what the Mets are trying to do. That's what the Yankees are trying to do. The Braves. And they're like big game hunting. So if that's the same idea the Jays have, why are they not involved?
Well, I think because the Jays are dealing with a different budget, for starters. They've got a high payroll. Like, they're going to be a top five, top 10 payroll, but it's money in, money out. You know, like, they went big game hunting with Springer. Ryu, Kikuchi was a pretty decent investment. Like, Barrios was a big investment.
You know? Yeah, you're right.
Barrios is big bucks.
Yeah, and the fact is, they've traded Teoscar. They let a couple of guys go, but there aren't like big contracts that are coming off the books. You know,
well, it must be nice to be a Dodgers fan though, because then you just say anybody and anybody's up there. You could say, yeah, we're probably getting him.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably getting Verlander. Him too.
Verlander's one is a Cy Young. He's
Freddie
won the World
Freeman.
Series.
We're gonna get him.
Yeah,
Verlander.
Let's get him. Yeah. Yeah. Just go grab him.
Cash. That's all it is. Cash.
Yep. Well, and look at Judge, man. Like, the report's 8 years, $300 million. The Yankees last year, what did they offer him? 7 at 2 something? And
yeah. I just find it weird, man. I get it. The guy's a draw. He hit 62 home runs. But just as like a former athlete myself, the idea of being offered 275 last year and the idea of waiting for 300 a year later, and he did bet on himself and he did come through, but it's like, really, dude? If we're talking $200 million difference, but 25, like, the hell's $25 million going to...
I think it's more. I thought it was 225. It's like 75 more, isn't it?
Yeah, and different terms. Like, he's going to be the highest paid per season player of all time, you know, more than likely. So, yeah, I hear you. It's last year, he was set for life anyway, right? He's
no
been
kidding.
Making a fortune for a long time. But
no kidding.
It also, I mean... You're hearing reports about that Ronaldo deal? That's cash. Like, that is ridiculous.
That's the Saudis again saying, here, well, what was it, $360 million or something for him to come?
It's like $200 a year. Like, it's insane. Like, this guy is... But, I mean, different sport, different, you know, eyes on it, pockets deep. Like, I'd
well,
like to...
that's the Saudis, though. Like, they make no mistake as to why that money is available.
Yeah, it's live, right. You know, the live money.
Yeah, it is. It's effectively. I mean, that's what it is. Yeah. It's bring him in, and I'm pretty sure there's a lot of bells and whistles that come with it. I don't think he'll accept that. I don't think he'll take it because it'll be, if you're coming, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to do that, and I don't think he's... Listen, Ronaldo, again, has made hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And I get it. I'm not living in that world. That tax bracket, it's foreign to me. You know, the idea of signing a contract worth $300 million, that's wild. But these guys are making so much money. They'll continue to make so much money. And at some point, you got to go where you want to go.
Well,
you know, I think Judge will get that in New York.
And in a lot of, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of these guys, it's they get in their head, they want a number. Bryce Harper wanted a number.
Right.
That was it. Like he didn't matter the year. He wanted a number.
And right. It had to be $300 million plus total.
Right. I wonder if Judge has got a number that he's just set on and going, I'll go to whoever's going to match
probably.
That number.
Yeah, he might.
Right.
He might be. All right. Eddie Olczyk coming up in 20 minutes. Leafs Sharks tonight. Jerry's percentages in 45 minutes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 now up on TSN 2.
How about this? Cross the wire. Get ready for this one. The Nets say Ben Simmons has been diagnosed with a left lateral, wait for this, a left lateral upper calf strain.
Interesting.
Are you for real, man?
Uh-oh. Well, you can't possibly be surprised. I mean,
dude, I don't know.
You need your calves to run. So I thought you were going to say, like, left lateral.
No, but Noodles,
like,
imagine telling your teammates, it's not like I don't have a blown calf. I have an upper left lateral calf strain.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what, just the upper part of your calf is strained?
The upper left lateral. It's very important distinction.
Very specific, though. I will say that. That's very specific.
He had been playing
that
better,
whole
too.
Story, he got 30 one night, didn't he?
I've been so sick, man. If you tell me that, I'll believe it. I'm burgundy right now, but I don't remember.
I think Ben Simmons, JP, did he not get 30 a couple nights ago?
No.
Last week?
I would have.
That would have been trending on Twitter.
God,
because
dead
you know
serious.
Why?
I think Ben Simmons got 30.
I don't know if he did.
I don't know, man.
I think that would have been trending on Twitter, and I also
It was 22.
Yes, okay. Come on. You gave me a heart attack there.
Close.
Like, if I miss this guy scoring 30, like, I'm not in the right place right now, but I got to be on that. Like, I got to know if Simmons hits 30.
Yeah.
Been goofing on him long enough.
When you take that headset, like, when you took that headset, were you down for the count for the whole night last night?
Oh, dude. I went right upstairs and was out.
Yeah.
I've been taking the headset off. Anyway, it doesn't matter. All right, we have a pair of tickets to give away. Leafs Flames, December 10th. Every day this week, we will provide the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player. And on Friday, you'll have a chance to call in and name that Leaf. Today's clue, this former Maple Leaf spent part of only one season in Toronto.
Is this the first round bust that caused head to blow off yesterday?
A bust and one season, part of one season. This is a tough one.
It really kept him around a long time. One season.
Part of one season, and he was a first round bust.
You said a big game, though. The guy's name was Biggs.
Yeah, he never made it to the Leafs.
Biggs, though.
He played parts of one season. He got a sniff.
Did he? Maybe he did. Maybe you're right. Yeah, maybe you're right. It was... Okay, JP's saying no, he didn't. There you go. JP telling you where to go quickly through me. I love
it. Dude, did you watch the games, JP Barry? I did.
Well,
he played parts of one season.
All right. JP's... He's
fighting back.
Man.
He's saying no way.
He's telling you. All right, hour two coming up. Eddie Olczyk, Jerry's percentages. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2.